Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We had agreed that we would start at a quarter past the hour. It is that time now. House Committee on Revenue for April 14th will commence. We will open. We have sufficient to begin a quorum. We will open a work session on House Bill 2449. This is a bill to allow the Department of Revenue to apportion refunds of tax reported on joint return and issued by the department if apportionment refund is requested by either spouse. We have heard this bill. Let's see. Have we? We've had this a couple of times previously. I don't show the meeting dates. I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, as you recall, there was the issue came up about spousal division of income for child support purposes, and that issue had come up particularly with respect to DHS and child support. And so Department of Revenue has been working with counsel to produce the Dash 2 amendments.
And we have the Dash 2 amendments before us. Dash 2 is in your packet, colleague. Adding to page 3 of the printed bill, deleting lines 28 through 35, and inserting subparagraph 6.
Good afternoon.
So that's 6A and B are deleted, and paragraph 6 is inserted back in. So if a joint return is filed, the department may make separate refunds at the request of either spouse. Separate refunds shall bear the same proportion of the total refund as the adjusted gross income of each spouse bears to the adjusted gross income of both spouses, or as otherwise determined by the department. Folks, that's a formula that I am familiar with, having worked with it throughout my entire professional life. Representative Boquist now moves the Dash 2 amendment. We are in work session. Any objection? Any discussion?
Nope.
No objections? Hearing and seeing none, the Dash 2 is appended to the House Bill 2449. Representative Pomp now moves House Bill 2449 as amended with the Dash 2 amendments of 414.05 to the full House. Does it have any subsequent referral?
No.
To the full House with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? For the record, all members are present and accounted for. No objection? Hearing and seeing no objection. So ordered. House Bill 2449 goes to the full House. Representative Comp, since you moved that, would you carry that, please, to the House?
I would be most happy to do that, Chairman Butler.
Thank you. Very kindly. I appreciate it. We will close the work session on House 2449, open the work session on 3441. Staff, Mazin, or is that Mary? Mary, I think that's you. 3441 allows the electors of certain municipal corporations to serve on the Budget Committee if authorized by a resolution of the Governing Board. Colleagues, we have heard this at least once previously. This was an issue that was brought to us by Representative Berger on behalf of fairly substantial cities. And there is one amendment. It is a Dash 1 amendment dated 4-4 of 05. Mary, will you explain that to us quickly, please?
Yes. The amendment or the bill?
The amendment.
The amendment simply removes the initial proposed increase from 200,000 to 400,000. So it actually deletes 400,000 and restores 200,000.
Restores 200,000.
Right.
Representative Berger now moves the Dash 1 amendment. Any discussion relative to the Dash 1 amendments? Any dissension? Hearing and seeing none, we will append the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 2441. Representative Berger now moves House 2441 as amended with the Dash 1 amendment to the full House floor. No subsequent referral on this? No subsequent referral to any other department, any other subcommittee?
Don't think so, sir.
Okay. There's no subsequent referral. Therefore, the motion by Representative Berger is to move House Bill 3441 as amended to the full House with a due pass. Any objection? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. All members are present and accounted for that vote.
I'd be happy to carry it.
Thank you very much, Representative Berger. We will close the work session on 3441. We will open the work session on House Bill 2868.
Okay.
Representative Bradley, I expect that you'll always tell me if my numbers are wrong, won't you?
I will try.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. He's the accountant's accountant down at that far hand down there. Okay. Mary, House Bill 2868 modifies the dates by which an application for continuing qualification for forest land or small tract forest land assessment must be filed following the sale or transfer of forest land. Any further discussion on that, Mary?
There were amendments.
Yes.
There is an amendment, Mr. Chair. I have gotten it about 5 minutes ago, and I've read it, but the amendment has not come from the General Counsel.
Okay.
So we have
an amendment to overview. Can you give it to us at a high level, and then we will go ahead and take this up another day.
Yes, I can, Mr. Chair. The original bill created a late filing fee, of course, with the proviso also that there would be possibly a 1% late filing fee based on the real market value of the property. This particular provision of the bill has been deleted. That's one change. The second change is that there were two or three line items in the original bill describing when a property owner could file or could notify, you know, the property appraiser of his intent to stay in the program, and it was rather confusing, and this has been simplified.
Okay.
Simply to say that the landowner has 30 days from the date of a notification that he intends to remain in the program. After this period, the owner may file to remain in the program conditional upon paying a late filing fee of a flat $200.
I think there was testimony that indicated that hardly ever had been any file late, perhaps two or three, or 3 to 5 maximum in any single year, is my recollection of them. So those amendments are forthcoming.
Yes,
I have a date on those.
I have a copy of what was just
non-conformed. Non-conformed, not prepared by legislative council.
This one is not correct.
Okay, all right. Do we have a time estimated for those? Chris, you want to come forward and tell us? We'll call Christine McNett to tell us when those amendments will be ready for us to examine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Christina McNitt with the Oregon Small Woodlands Association. I'm sure Dexter is working furiously to get these down. I understand he had a conversation even this morning with Norm Miller from Department of Revenue, who's here, and also Dennis Day with County Assessors. I'd say generally that we all agreed on the amendments that we submitted to council, but there was a wrinkle that came up this morning that I think we'd all appreciate just a little bit more time to see the language and make sure we all understand it at the same time, at the same place, and what it does or does not do.
Thank you very much, Christine McNett. We will then go ahead and consider that at a little bit later time. Any further discussion, Chris? You've heard the presentation, representation by Legislative Revenue. Anything that you want to add to that testimony?
No, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair?
Thank you. Yes, Representative Hess.
I'm just curious, is this a 3/5 vote measure, in your opinion?
I wasn't of the opinion that it does require a 3/5 vote. It's a fee within the woodland, small woodlot owners.
Mr. Chair and members, what it does is it really changes, it doesn't raise any revenue, it changes an existing tax program, some of the implementation time periods within that existing program.
I agree, it does, but I know that there's a revenue impact to the positive side, at least in the
state. They're collecting.
Okay.
Go ahead, Mary.
Representative Haas, Mr. Chair, the impact would be the fee, of course, and I'm not sure. The numbers were very, very small from the letters that I reviewed from the property appraisers. This is slightly lower, actually, than what they had originally assessed based probably on the higher fee.
Yeah. Okay. And the small tract farmland woodlot owners had agreed, I think, substantially was some of the information we'd received previously.
On the amendments and on the bill, yes, Mr. Right. Chairman, that's correct.
And this does, in fact, raise, I think we said previously, about $20,000 in each biennia.
Mr.
And to the county's general fund, not to the state.
Correct. You may recall when we testified on this bill previously, if a woodland owner had missed their opportunity to opt into the small tract option, then they were out for 5 years hold. So what the county assessors suggested in the original version of the bill was to allow them sort of a last gasp chance at the end of the year in December. But to do that the landowner would have to pay a $200 fee to cover the cost of the county assessors to do all the paperwork associated with that option.
Representative Haas, is that responsive to your concerns?
Yes. I just thought that we did.
Thank you. Colleagues, we will wait then on those amendments to come forward. Thank you, Christine McNiff.
Thank you.
And with that, we will close the work session on House Bill 2868. We will open the work session. We will open the work session on House Bill 2199. Mary?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This program has been before you before, and I'm sorry I don't have a date today on there, 14th. I had a public hearing on it. It moves the oversight of the vertical housing program from the Economic and Community Development Department to the Oregon Housing and Community Service Department. It allows the partial exemption to vary in proportion to the floor space as opposed to the number of floors that are allocated for low-income residential use. It allows the exemption if only one building in the vertical housing project is multi-level as opposed to all buildings being multi-level. Thank you, Representative Riley, for clarifying that. Allows the land value of the property to be included in the partial exemption. Proposes a 10-year sunset provision. This is what was requested at the public hearing, and this is the major change to the bill.
That's Section 13 on the A2 amendments. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Colleagues, you should have the House Bill 2199-A2 amendments dated 4/14 before you, which adds Section 13, actually deletes, let's see, as the A engrossed on page 7.
It inserts Section 13 and changes the 13 to 14, the following section.
You're exactly right, Representative. You're exactly right.
Mr. Chair, I move this amendment.
We're in work session, colleagues. Representative Riley now moves the dash A2 amendments of 4/14/05 to House Bill 2199 as previously A engrossed. Discussion? Any opposition to the motion? Representative Berger is excused for the moment and said she would like to have an opportunity to vote on this at a later time. We may give her that opportunity when we finish this up. With that, there being no opposition, we will go ahead and append the A2 of 4/14/05 amendments to House Bill 2199 as previously A and Gross. Representative Riley now moves House Bill 2199A as being B engrossed with the dash A2 amendments to the floor. With a due pass amendment. You don't like that, do you, Christy? What did I say wrong? 2199A, as engrossed with the dash A2 amendments, be reprinted as B engrossed and be passed to the House floor with a due pass amendment. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing and seeing none. So ordered. Recognized for the record, please, that Representative Berger has been called away, is excused from that vote. May yet have an opportunity if we open that back up. With that, I will.
I'll be glad to carry that.
And Representative Riley will carry that to the House floor. We will close the work session on 2199A engrossed. Let's set that over to the side. We'll open the work session on House Bill 2340. House Bill 2340 has been previously heard. It authorizes Board of Rural Fire Protection Department to create fees for services provided by the district. Would you like to go ahead and introduce that to us, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you said, it allows a Rural Fire Protection District Board to adopt an ordinance as provided in ORS 198.510 to 198.600 that creates a fee for any service provided by the district, but the fee may not exceed the cost of the service provided. It grants the fee authority in addition to any other authority granted under the local law or by documents created in the for the district. The reference, by the way, to ORS 198.600 adds a penalty of $250, imprisonment, or both if fees are not paid. The background on this is that many of the 250...
So we're going to put people in jail if they don't pay their fire fees?
That's right. Potentially.
Let's visit about that just a little bit, shall we?
Let's call a timeout on Alan.
Let's back up. Let's back up. Tell us about the imprisonment for failure to pay your fire fees.
I only know, Mr. Chair, that I received a call that alerted me to that provision, and so I added it because there was a phone call about it. I can't remember who it was that actually, you know, noticed it, but
obviously it's Representative Olson.
Yeah, we've traced the number back to Representative Olson's office.
I'm looking in the bill. I didn't see imprisonment for failure to file or for failure to pay your fire.
You got to get to that statute, 198.6.
So it says, unless expressly prohibited by the document creating the fire district, the district board may adopt an ordinance. May adopt an ordinance as provided under ORS 198.510.
More people.
Two, it's the 600.
Okay, 198.600.
Can we look that up?
Yeah, please. 198.510. We're going to stand at ease for just a moment, please.
Yeah, I don't remember. We'll come back into session. We're in work session on House Bill 2340. We have looked at 198-600. 198-600 does deal with, what did you say, Representative Olson, Class A misdemeanor?
Here's the unclassified misdemeanor, sir.
Unclassified misdemeanor.
That's correct.
Which is standard under the current policy for special districts for a maximum fine of 30 days or $250 or both, maximum. Mm-hmm.
I think it should be higher.
That would be equivalent to a Class C misdemeanor, but that would be unclassified.
For failure to pay your fire fees as billed. Okay. And I'm going to guess those are probably only applied under extenuating circumstances. Further discussion relative to the relative to that particular portion of it. Were you done making your presentation, Mary?
Certainly, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
I gave you the background on this, but I'll just repeat it very quickly, that the proposal is based on the districts, many of whom provide services outside their service area and are not being reimbursed for those charges, and they would like to be able to cover some of the costs for providing additional services, and some of them were described for you at the initial meeting.
Yes, those were like ambulance services and those mm-hmm. kinds of things.
EMS, fire prevention
and ambulance service districts probably already are covered under the provisions of 198.600. So I don't know how many people get thrown in jail for failing to pay their ambulance bill. But that's, again, as we say, current statute.
That is correct, Mr. Chair. And those were some of the issues that were discussed when we met previously. Under the issues discussed, the Oregon Fire Directors Association indicates that the bill is needed in order to clarify statutorily whether the rural fire districts are authorized to charge fees to cover their costs in providing various services that are within the scope of the agency. And to that, the committee had requested clarification of the types of services and the costs.
Right.
And you were supposed to probably get additional testimony on that.
We did. We did receive additional testimony about some of the. Is someone here to talk to any additional issues over in work session?
Jim was on our
way. Okay. All right. And there is a fiscal impact to the. To the local local ambulance or those local districts, fire districts as well, they could receive as much as $12.8 million to $13 million during the 07-09 biennium.
That's correct, Mr. Chair, and that is that those are based on a number of assumptions, okay, which may not be verified if we find out we can't get a clear delineation of what services will be taxed, or will be charged, okay? And I spoke to District 2, I believe it was, a manager there who gave me some idea about what kinds of services they weren't charging for and what the range of what the costs would be, let's say, for a large district versus a very small district. And it gave me the proportional sizes of the districts.
Okay, we're going to go ahead and have a temporary recess on House Bill 2340. We'll go ahead and
Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir. Representative Olson is recognized.
I thought it was my understanding that they were the folks that introduced this bill Monday were planning on bringing back a whole view of three different agencies for you.
And we do have in the record the matrix of a statutory authority and items which are presently being charged on. Well, let's. We'll go ahead and go on to a temporary recess on 2340, and we'll hold that in abeyance pending further discussion. We'll open a work session on House Bill 2125. Thank you, Mary.
House Bill 21 and 25 is the one that was brought to us by the Employment Department. Just to refresh your memory, this is the bill where we extended the tribes from 9 to 28.
No, we didn't extend the tribes.
Right.
We did, however, want to amend that to have to add the Butler tribe.
And this is just to allow the playing field to be leveled for and the tribal entities rather than tribes pay taxes for the unemployment insurance on the same par as local governments do.
Okay, and we received testimony from Pat Dittleval as well as Tamara Brickman on, for clarification on behalf of the Department of Employment. We are in a work session on House Bill 2125. The chair now moves 2125 to the House with a full or to the full House with a due pass recommendation. Discussion.
Mr. Chair, I just have a
Representative Boquist.
I must have been absent on this. I'm assuming that the tribal entities came in and testified on that.
Yes, Pat Dittleval on behalf of the tribal entities and Ms. Brickman on behalf of the Department of Employment.
Consensual testimony in concurrence with.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah, we did modify the background write-up that we had received on 411 to indicate that there's 28 tribal entities which pay the tax at present and that they would like to go ahead and be treated as governmental entities in that regard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
For the record, Representatives Berger and Esquivel are out of the room and have been excused for other house business. With that, colleagues, we are going to the motion is to pass House Bill 2125 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any objection? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered by the chair. I'll carry that, and then this will also reflect that Representatives Berger and Esquivel were excused from the vote. We will now come back and we will close the public, or we will close the work session on House Bill 2125. Colleagues, we are in temporary recess as to House Bill 2340. We'll now reopen the work session on 2340 and call General Ingram.
Speed limit. Yes,
I think you just got an idea on it. Thank you, Mr. Chair. General Ingram, so many bills, so little time. I understand you had a question with regard to Chapter 198 and the penalties for not paying the fees. Is that correct?
Well, I think we've resolved that.
That is standard language, and that is not a precedent statute.
Right, and I guess I've never known anybody being thrown in jail for failure to pay their local ambulance service fees. But
correct.
I hope it doesn't happen as a result of this bill. I guess we didn't ask Jeff Johnson or Bob Blackmore, the attorney, the other day from Tualatin. They anticipate throwing in
jail. No, and I, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, we've never heard of that occurring at the city level as well. They have this. They have the exact same statute that is applicable. For the municipal departments.
I think the issue was what are the list of services and the anticipation that we would hear back from you, General, regarding the cost information from the firefighters for the record.
For the record, Chair Butler, members of the committee, and it's nice to see Representative Boquist and Representative Haas here because we've had this discussion before. The types of fees that we're talking about are the EMT calls, the ambulance calls, the inspections, and again, not the first inspection, but we're looking at perhaps the second and third inspections, and beyond that to provide some incentive for people to come into compliance.
What kind of inspections? Fire inspections?
Yes, Chair Butler, for the fire inspections. What happens is many times a department will go out to make the inspection, makes the suggestions for what needs to be corrected. Those corrections will not be carried out, the department finds themselves going out a second and a third and sometimes even a fourth time. And what they would like to do, I haven't heard any of my districts indicate that they want to charge for that first call, but they would like to be able to start charging if things aren't brought into compliance by the second or third call, then they would. You and I also, Chair Butler, had a conversation about full costing as compared with incremental costing. I have also had conversations with the districts with regard to that issue. None of the districts are interested in building up the costs over a five-year period incrementally. What they're looking at doing is the full costing, and I want to make sure that that is clear on the record. They're looking to recover their full cost of providing those services. And I'm happy to answer any other questions.
Questions for Ms. Ingram? Representative Comp is recognized.
Jenna, just a quick question. Let's say that I go into cardiac arrest and you have to call an EMT here. Will the will the House representatives be charged for having an EMT come and give me CPR?
Representative Comp, I'm sorry, Chair Butler, Representative Comp, what we are trying to get at, I'm going to be very clear, I'm not avoiding your question. What we're mainly trying to get at, the example that I gave to Representative Olson several days ago, there's a little settlement called Adair Village. Actually, you heard a lot about Adair Village today on the floor of the House.
Yeah.
That is a very small settlement that is right next to Highway 99. That little department is supported solely by the property taxes of the individuals who live in Adair Village. And that department is able to accommodate its citizens based on their tax base. However, because they're right next to Highway 99 and they have all of these calls for vehicle accidents, they're not able to pay for everything just on their property tax base. So what they would like to do in that example is be able to charge people outside of their area. And so far, the only charges that I've heard are when they are providing a great deal of service to those who are not within their district but outside and are not paying the property taxes to support the district. And that's what they're looking to get at.
Well, and
follow-up representative.
Thank you, Chairman Butler. My question is literally, as a school employee, we have times where people are called to service and we just couldn't live without the EMTs. But whether it's a legislative public body or other public bodies, you know, is this charge going to be applicable?
Who do you send the bill to, in other words?
Right.
Have the child that's being served or the customer? And that's a good question.
Again, Chair Butler, Representative Comp, I'm not aware of anyone sending bills to to residents within their district. This is mainly applicable to vehicle accidents, residents outside of the district. That's what they're looking at.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Riley, let me ask you, Representative Comp, is that responsive to your question?
It still does and does not. It doesn't have the clarity
let's drill down just a little bit further until you're comfortable. But if we need to have some changes on this, we can bring it back. But I want you to feel comfortable.
Well, I'm comfortable with the bill. It's just that I don't see where that is that specified in the bill that it's people for outside of their district.
Chair Butler, Representative Comp, no, it is not. What we are looking to do right now is to bring the fire districts into the same, give them the same option as a municipal fire department and other special districts. Currently, it is not the practice for those other entities to charge their own, the residents of their own departments or districts. And we are just trying to bring the rural fire protection districts into the same, give them the same authority as the municipal districts.
So it's your testimony, generally, that someone in an ambulance service district isn't charged by the ambulance service district?
I'm sorry, Representative Butler, the ambulance is a little different.
I see.
The ambulance service, I thought we were talking about EMT or
EMT.
For example, in the situation where there's a vehicle accident.
Okay.
Transport is a separate.
Transport separate. Okay, yes. Fine. Thank you. Representative Riley is recognized.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was kind of on the same line and wanted to ask if we could maybe look at some amendments to this bill, because what you seem to be asking for is not what the bill says. The bill says, you know, we can charge fees. It doesn't say we'd like to charge for people who don't comply, and it doesn't say we'd like to charge for people outside of our district. It says we'd like to be able to charge. And so, if I may just a little
please
bit more, it seems to me that you're asking us to take your word that this is what you really have in mind, and if that's really the case, we should just put it in the bill.
Okay.
The chair yields the gavel to Representative Riley. Go ahead and continue on.
Representative Butler, Representative Riley, that's an excellent question, and thank you for bringing it up, and I'm happy to answer that. What we're trying to do with this bill is put the rural fire districts on the exact same footing as a city department. And city departments are not currently restricted in that manner, and we would not like to see the rural fire districts restricted in that manner. I can tell you that that is currently not the practice among the fire departments or the fire districts, but we would just hate to see two separate standards written for departments and districts that are providing the exact same service.
Since I have the gavel, in that case, why don't we go back and change the law for those folks and make it what they're really doing, and then bring it into standardization, if you will.
Chair Butler and semi-chair Riley.
No, it's just, just address. Representative Riley.
That's a conversation. I think you would have some pushback with regard from the League of Oregon Cities and others. Again, my bailiwick is only, my interest right now is only in the rural fire protection districts. If I may, Representative Riley, it was my task last spring at the request of the Oregon Special Districts Association to create a matrix, and I believe you might have it attached to my earlier testimony, that shows the authority of every other special district to be able to charge a fee to recoup for some of the services they provide. In every single instance, the other special districts were allowed to charge a fee of one kind or another, with the exception of the Rural Fire Protection District. My concern, and this is the reason we brought the bill forward, is that there are legal opinions on both sides of this issue as to whether or not they may. So it's crucial for us. It could be a liability issue if they are not granted the authority to do what some of them are already doing, because they've been told by legal counsel that it's okay. They've been told by legal counsel it's not okay. Legislative counsel says it's okay as long as it's within their charter, and they don't have charters. So what I'm saying is there is so much confusion surrounding this issue. All we're asking is that those districts be placed on the same level playing field as other special districts and, quite frankly, municipal fire departments.
I understand.
We're not asking to go beyond that. And if you want to back that up and roll that back, again, that's probably a conversation you're going to want to have with the League of Oregon Cities and others.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Riley. General, I did have notes to say that we were going to get some cost information, some additional cost information from the firefighters for the record regarding the costs of operating EMT, ambulance, fire inspections, and those kinds of things. So the chair recognizes Representative Boquist.
I just want to go back to Representative Cobb's point that was earlier when Bill Jenner went out partway here. I mean, the city of Salem, if one of us has a heart attack right here, under existing statutes, the city of Salem is going to send us a bill. I mean, it's back to life because they are a municipality. Their EMT is going to send us a bill. And under their existing authority, if you guys don't chip in and it's me, they can come arrest me and put me in jail they can go to the court and get a judge to do it. Likewise, the city of Dallas in my district does the same thing. However, unfortunately, even in my district, you have the Polk Southwest Rural, which responds outside of the city, and they're servicing the arteries to two Native American gambling casinos, and it's killing them. Because they don't have the authority, the fire district itself doesn't have authority, when they're in fact the first responder. The long-range impact that has already happened in the city and elsewhere in the state that we're seeing is that fire districts are just getting out of the EMT business period. They're saying, we're not going to do it anymore, and you're going to get an ambulance service. You've seen it here in the local area. There's been a considerable amount of discussion where we go back to the old days where it's a private ambulance service because they can charge a fee. Along the line, I fully agree with the rationale Representative Riley is pushing along. But what we really have right now is we have cities and other entities and government entities, except the fire district, that are already doing this all the way down the line.
The fire districts have to do it, though, or this has been just a service that firefighters have taken upon themselves,
right.
Isn't it?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. But to give you an example, in the Southwest Rural Polk area, where we have a fire department, 10 years ago, prior to the present economic development on the way to the coast, which is contributing to the local economy, beating up other people, the average call, the vast majority of calls were in fact calls for, fire calls that were going to local houses, the occasional farmer who lit the wrong thing and the stacks got away, and it was all people in the district. Now, I think in excess of 90% of all calls are EMT calls to the highway. And because, what they're looking at now suddenly is we don't have any, because of compression, we have no place to grow. We have no place to get funding at all, and they don't have the authority. Now, if you happen to be driving, on the way to the Oregon State game, and you crash in the city of Monmouth in the middle of the street, the city department responds and they'll bill you. Or if you crash in Corvallis and they'll bill you.
But if you're outside in another portion of my district, which is in fact Adair Village, you're outside of the city limit, it is now a rural fire department in a fire district, not a municipality, and you don't get billed, and they pay for the cost.
For the EMT.
For the EMT response, and likewise...
But again, that's not a mandated service for that fire department.
It is... It's very questionable, and that's probably the lawyer. Because you're...
Moral response.
Yeah, and it's the Good Samaritan Act argument back and forth. But
we're
you're quite right.
We're paying Good Samaritans. This is the equal opportunity for billing for Good Samaritans Act.
Well, Mr. Chair, we could look at it from another perspective. We could just tell them no, and then they stop doing it.
Representative Bolton.
Chair, I mean, I can tell you there's been lots of times I was really glad that volunteer fire department came out. I can think of Crabtree out off of Highway 126 or 226 up towards Sio in that area. Jenna's been talking about Adair Village. Their volunteers have spent, I mean, countless hours and have not received any reimbursement over motor vehicle crashes on 99W there. And they've had, I mean, I've seen them where they've been out there at 12-hour shocks. And there's no reimbursement.
And I think we have testimony that there's some of these... Some of these calls from rural fire districts do take them away, the volunteers away, and rather expensive at a significant local expense. Representative Boquist?
And I believe it's either in this committee or in agriculture, we've actually heard testimony that the volunteer does, of course, get, so we're paying for Good Samaritan, and they get a grand total of $1 for the call. $1. But that doesn't pay for the fuel, it doesn't pay for the bandages, it doesn't pay for any of the expendables or anything that we went through to go out onto the highway and have it and support it.
Representative Riley is recognized. Thank you, Representative.
Yeah, just to say, those things have absolutely no bearing on what I was saying, which was we should charge them, you know, if we want to charge them, let's do it. But to put on the books that you can charge things that you don't want to charge seems to me to be the wrong way to go.
Colleagues, we're in work session on House Bill 2340. There is some discussion about it, and I think what I'd like to do is have Representative Riley and Representative Boquist meet with Ms. Ingram, and we will do so and bring this bill back at a later time. We appreciate your testimony, General, and if you can please work with Representative Riley with his questions. Okay. Representative Comp, if you have further questions relative to those issues, too, you're welcome to go ahead and participate in that as long as we don't have a quorum. With that, I will appoint you as a subcommittee to address that. General, we'll hear back amongst you 3 to 4 minutes.
Thank you, Chair.
With that, we will close the work session on House Bill 2340. The chair entertains a motion to suspend the rules to allow Representative Berger to vote on House Bill 2199. Is there any objection? Hearing and seeing no objection, Representative Berger, you wish to vote on House Bill 2199 as they engrossed?
Yes, I do.
How do you vote?
Vote aye.
Representative Berger votes aye. We will close 2199. Chair entertains a motion to suspend the rules to allow Representatives Berger and Esquivel to vote on House Bill 2125. Any objection? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. Representative Berger, how do you vote on 2125?
Votes aye.
Berger votes aye. Representative Esquivel, how do you vote on House Bill 2125?
Aye, Mr. Chair.
Representative Esquivel votes aye on House Bill 2125. We will now close the work session on House Bill 2125. Colleagues, that finishes our agenda for today. As close as I can tell, we are bringing back a couple of bills to be heard on a later date. Please set your calendars. Jimmy, isn't it great to be on Thursday and have an open afternoon on Friday?
Not too open for me.
Not too open. Everybody's busy. Everybody's busy. You all have other meetings today. Colleagues, please open your schedules for four-hour meetings next week, Monday through Thursday.
Four-hour?
4 hours. Well, 4 o'clock. 3 hours until 4 o'clock. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. We won't get to 4 hours just yet. Paul, anything else for the good of the order today? With that, we will close. Thank you very much.